Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards. Save big money
at Menards. Going mainstream. How extremists are taking over. The internationally best-selling author of Going Dark, The Secret Social Lives of Extremists, returns to explore why radical ideas are increasingly infiltrating politics, popular culture, and our everyday lives. Incels, anti-vaxxers, conspiracy theorists, neo-Nazis. Once these groups all belonged on the fringes of the political spectrum, today, accelerated by the pandemic, global conflict and rapid tech change, the ideas are becoming more and more widespread. It is the subject of the new book by Julia Ebner called Going Mainstream. Delighted to say that Julia joins me live on the line. Julia, good morning to you.
Hi, good morning.
Thanks for joining me this morning. Mainstream, right, going mainstream. People might say that, oh, yeah, we are looking, you know, we are being force-fed our news by the mainstream media, like my dear self. So what's wrong in looking for our own sources of news and different opinions?
Well, there's of course nothing wrong in that. I guess citizen journalism has seen a dramatic rise. And there is, of course, there was always the utopian idea of the internet that it would lead to the democratization of knowledge. But what we've seen is unfortunately also the viral spread of conspiracy myths that can be quite dangerous to minority communities. And frankly speaking, also to the heart of our democracies, which we've seen with attacks on the US Capitol, but also on other democratic institutions and even attacks on science. So the spread of disinformation. And I think that is something that we've slowly seen over the past years, where there's really been a rise in those kinds of misinformation and also conspiracy myths and even extremist ideologies.
And presumably this is pretty much a result of these ideas can be spread much more quickly now because we have at the end of our smartphones and our laptops, we have an audience that you can send stuff out to without editing. And obviously can be picked up via algorithms by people who are, shall we say, receptive to these ideas.
Yeah, I'm afraid so. We've seen a lot of kind of self-styled influencers and citizen journalists who've spread ideas within a really short period of time, and sometimes, of course, dangerous ideas that were, for example, we saw it in the COVID times that some of these pieces of content were even prompting people to do life-threatening stuff to react to COVID by taking, for example, chloride or other pseudo medicine. And I think that has really shown the extent to which disinformation can travel even at a faster speed than the pandemic itself. And that we've also seen the rise of influencers who have been spreading QAnon conspiracy myths about the so-called global elites, and where that has led to a kind of destabilization of our democratic systems and of our information systems.
So, I mean, one of the things that we, how your book is looking at how these groups have grown and who are behind, in whose interests it is to have these influence, to have these group pushing their narratives.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I've been kind of studying extremist and violent extremists, including terrorist groups, for the last 8 years, and I have to say the last few years have seen a dramatic shift in how some of these ideas, these fringe ideas, and some of the vocabulary even that came out of really kind of the most hidden corners on the internet have traveled into the mainstream and into mainstream discourse, even into mainstream politics. And that's something that I examined in that new book, where I went undercover and did a range of investigations inside extremist communities, ranging from white supremacist movements and racist movements to misogynist movements, conspiracy myths, kind of anti-democratic movements. And I looked at these different vectors through which the mainstreaming is happening and how what the journeys are of these conspiracy myths and how they get to a bigger audience.
And it's an interesting one, isn't it? The right wing and also the misogynist, because if you look at the incel movement, this is a movement that is perfect for, you know, young men of a certain age who can't get a girlfriend and sitting alone in front of computers, and the only things they're going to be influenced by are perhaps video games and the darker fringes of pornography, and therefore their idea about what a man should be and how he should treat a woman have been influenced by that, and they are just ripe for anybody to come in and really twist them or really groom them to their ideology.
Yes, absolutely. The incel community is, of course, still a fringe community, but we've seen that they've inspired violence against women and against, in general, against civilians, also against men, actually, who, well, for in some cases, they see as too good looking, or where they are just so frustrated with their own situation that they resort to violence against others. But there's a bigger phenomenon on the misogynist side, where we see also mainstreamed manifestations or mutations of these ideologies. For example, the rapper, kind of US British rapper Andrew Tate, has of course made headlines many times in the last few months for spreading violent misogynist ideas to his 30 million followers, and he has gained a big audience, especially among the younger generations. Where it's interesting, because I also spoke to some school teachers in the UK, but also in other countries like Germany, and they said there's a rise in rape denial and in misogynist ideas, even in kind of the school community or in schools. So even among minors, which is, of course, alarming.
And one of the things with that, of course, is that, well, I've seen this with Andrew Tate as well, because he cropped up on, you know, I live on social media. He cropped up on, and I look at other, well, I don't ban people. Very, very rarely do I ban people off my social media feeds. I just want to see what they're up to, or various groups. But suddenly Andrew Tate starts popping up on the anti-vaxxing websites and the QAnon websites and saying he's a champion of free speech. And so, you know, although they're saying, you know, the conspiracy theorists seem to think that the mainstream media and the established governments are all part of some unholy cabal. And yet, when it comes to people like Tate or others like that, they seem to link him, them all in, as this sort of fighting the globalists, eco-warrior type, you know, freedom fighters.
Yeah, and this whole debate, or the kind of lowest common denominator of fighting for free speech, is quite interesting, because I would say I'm definitely in favor of free speech, but only up to a certain point, where I would say your own free speech should end there, whenever you cross the line of actually limiting someone else's free speech. I would say that should be kind of the standards applied to free speech. I'm definitely in favor of anyone voicing their opinions. But I think what we've seen with influencers such as Andrew Tate, or also others who spread hatred against other, or against either minority communities or against just simply people online in a systematic way, that is that they also silence other people. And they, in effect, it's quite paradoxical for them to stand up for free speech while they're actually shutting down other people's voices.
So how did you went undercover online and undercover in person? What were you trying to discover by doing this?
Several things. So I've always in my research been very focused on the human sides of radicalization and of manipulation. And I'm really interested in how people get involved in extremist movements, what the human motivators are, the psychological drivers of people, why they would join, for example, a community like incels in the first place, or a white supremacist movement. And then I'm also interested in the tactics of these movements, how they want to spread their ideas to the mainstream, how they sometimes launch campaigns to manipulate the discourse online, or even to influence opinions. And sometimes that's, of course, now through the means of kind of really slick social media campaigns, but also visual content, memes that are funny, kind of satirical content, even the gamification of stuff, or the hijacking of hobby communities, or indoctrination is almost a side effect of actually something that's a lot more social in essence.
And what did you kind of discover when you went into these communities? What were you, I mean, you've all done this sort of stuff before. So were you prepared for what you found? Were you prepared for some of the statements that were coming out and some of the ideologies that were proposed?
It's always hard to be prepared. Although I've been looking at extremist content for 8 years now, it's always shocking to see the extent to which, I mean, some people are radicalized towards violence, and where there are even sometimes attacks being plotted, which I witnessed in some of the most extreme communities. So that's always hard to be prepared for. But what I found quite interesting was that there is no clear profile anymore for extremists. That especially with the pandemic, we've really seen that people of all different backgrounds have become more vulnerable and more prone also to radicalizing. And of course, there are different radicalization is a whole, it can happen on a whole spectrum. Sometimes they might just be at the entry point where you can still potentially get them back by raising awareness, get them back into the kind of the political middle. Although that word in itself is probably a bit difficult to define. But I guess the question is always, where do they sit on this radicalization spectrum? But what we've seen is that people from all different ideological kind of corners have been recruited into extremist movements, or at least have become prone to extremism, people from left, right, and center. And that's something that's fairly new, but I didn't really encounter in my previous research.
And, of course, we've seen that these views that have become, would have previously been regarded as extremist and fringe have been accepted into mainstream politics. I'm thinking QAnon and the way that this has been going over in the States.
Yeah, it's especially QAnon. We've seen the studies that came out of the US, for example. The University of Chicago has published some numbers about how widespread QAnon-related beliefs are in the U.S. and how much popular support there was for the U.S. Capitol riots, the January 6th Capitol storming. And these numbers are in the double digits. And the same is true for surveys that have come out of the U.K. population or the German population. So it's really, especially QAnon has managed to combine old but also new conspiracy myths and really tailor them to the crisis that we've been facing, and therefore tapping into frustrations, into grievances and anger about politics, about things that were really kind of shaping people's daily lives and that were seen as very personal in their identities. So I think that's something where QAnon has unfortunately been extremely successful in spreading their ideas to the mainstream.
And of course, the other thing is, I mean, you know, we're in Europe, and one of the big issues for almost decades now has been immigration. You know, how with Syria, we've had it across the Mediterranean, we have it in the UK at the moment with the Stop the Boats campaign. And it is very easy to put images of, and I'll never forget this, you know, young men of fighting age, quote unquote, who seem to be storming off boats and running up beaches in the UK, or getting on, you know, coming from Albania or coming across the Mediterranean. And a photograph like that can be used, and therefore it can be posted on social media, and people don't even know where it has come from. So therefore, if you're not your own editor, or you rely solely on these groups for your quote-unquote research, then you're going to get a pretty skewed view of life.
Yeah, we've also seen a lot of disinformation and conspiracy myths around the topic of migration. That's definitely true. And there is somewhat a repetition from back a few years ago when we had the so-called migration and refugee crisis in Europe. We see very similar narratives being deployed today, but also against various minority communities. So especially the whole sexual predator kind of sexual crime narrative, where very often there is disinformation about alleged rape cases being spread, or about migrants causing more troubles in terms of sexual crimes. And those narratives have been deployed to also foster wider conspiracy myths, which then sometimes even become anti-Semitic in their undertone, and which sometimes they're added layers, because research showed that once you believe in one conspiracy myth, you're much more likely to buy into others as well. So often you see that it starts with one conspiracy myth, say about migration, and then there are additional layers that are added to that. But the great replacement idea, this idea that whites are gradually being replaced by non-whites, that's definitely one of the most popular migration-related conspiracy myths, which has been spread by the identitarian movement or by the new right, in Europe, but also by the alt-right in the US. And this University of Chicago study also showed that it was one of the two, the other one being QAnon ideologies that really drove the Capitol rioters, or that Capitol rioters subscribed to.
And of course, we've had the Russia's invasion of Ukraine, and if you're looking at a nation that pumps out disinformation to a huge level, that's Russia. And some of the stuff that you see coming out claiming, oh, this picture, you know, the massacre at Bucha is all actors. This picture of a child wounded was taken back in Ukraine in 2000 and whatever it was, 2014. I had one popping up claiming that Zelensky was George Soros's bastard child. So, you know, you can draw a line, can't you, on these? And as you said, they all starts to, you know, I've had people say that Putin is fighting a war against the globalists in Ukraine, etc.
Exactly. Putin has been painted as a hero in many of the conspiracy myth communities because he's seen as the antidote to the so-called Western elites. Of course, there are a lot of pieces of disinformation and propaganda that are in the interest of the Kremlin to get out as well, to further destabilize Europe and North America. So there is a shared interest in some of the fringe groups or some of the extremist groups in Europe and Putin in terms of kind of shaking up the current power structures in our liberal democratic countries in the West. And that's definitely, that was seen in some of the propaganda pieces that come out of RT or Russia Today or Sputnik, especially in their English and German language formats, where they often spread disinformation about topics that are highly controversial already and divisive in Europe.
So how do we halt this flow of disinformation, and how is there, are there anybody out there doing anything to counter some of these outlandish claims? Are there any success stories? Because it'd be very easy to write a book going, you know, here, this, we are going down a path of disinformation, a path of extremism, a path of the you know, the hard fringe, if you will.
Yeah, there's of course sadly no ultimate solution for that, but I do suggest I have a whole chapter dedicated to the solutions and approaches to tackle these issues in the end of the book, where I spoke to 10 different experts who gave insights on what we can do on an education level, but also what we can do on a social media level, and how we can tackle the different touch points where extremists start radicalizing people, the psychological touch point, the social one, and the technological one. So one big part of the solution, of course, has to be education and raising awareness about the manipulation techniques, which is also something my book tries to do by using undercover investigations. What are the tactics that are being deployed by extremist movements to mainstream their ideologies? And how do they travel sometimes from fringe communities to bigger social media platforms where we might not even understand the very subtle references or the symbols that are being used or some of the vocabulary that's being used. And I think it's also important to have almost maybe a new subject in high schools that would be at the intersection of psychology and digital literacy. We talk a lot about digital literacy in terms of distinguishing high quality media from fake news or from media outlets that are not reliable. But we don't really talk that much about the psychological level of what do online groups do with us on a psychological level? How can we be manipulated, but also as on a societal level? I think it's really important to tackle these different issues that have come up with the emergence of social media and digital communities. To also make sure, for example, hobby communities are not all of a sudden being exploited by extremists and all of a sudden radicalize or turn highly politically biased or radical.
But I suppose the problem is getting these people in conversation, because you run up against oh, I've done my research, or we can't trust you because you're the mainstream media.
That's very true. I mean, this education piece would be sitting, I guess, more in the early prevention space, where I think Schools should introduce that for the digital natives, but we should also talk about how to reach digital migrants, so the older generations, which are often even more represented in the, which have a higher representation in the, for example, the conspiracy myth communities. It's often the 50 plus age people who are part of those. But yeah, definitely when it comes to kind of getting people out of those movements who are ready, who've already radicalized to some extent, I would say that there we have to think about other solutions. And there are definitely some programs that we've pioneered at the Institute for Strategic Dialogue, where I work as a research fellow. So we, for example, done online one-on-one mentoring sessions where we've worked with psychologists, but also with former conspiracy theorists and former extremists who then try to use an emotional bridge or understand what are the psychological drivers, why people believe in a conspiracy myth, and use that as a starting point for de-radicalizing them or for...
I mean, you can argue that a lot of people, you say this about the other 50s being into the conspiracy theories, but you can argue that a lot of it is that, especially from my generation, you see the world changing in a way that you couldn't have seen. The technology has taken over in the past 10, 15, 20 years that you couldn't have seen coming either. You hit a certain age and you realize that perhaps you're not living the life that you wanted to. And you want something to explain what's going on and why you aren't living the life you want to. And so a conspiracy theory, it's somebody else's problem. The reason that I'm not A, B, or C is because of this group or this elite or that bunch. And then it's very attractive. And if you go onto a website, onto a social media feed that has got an algorithm that appeals to that, then that's how it's going to happen. So it is a re-education program, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I completely agree with you that a lot of the grievances that are kind of at the beginning of radicalizing towards extreme ideologies, but also of buying into conspiracy myths are legitimate grievances. And that's also something I found in my conversations and my first-hand interviews with even the most extreme of extremists. There's still a very human side to them, and it's necessary to understand what's driving them and what the psychological explanation is of why they've joined a specific group. I also want to mention that not all conspiracy myths are harmful. Of course, there are so many conspiracy myths, and some of them have kind of anti-minority and anti-democratic dimensions to them, but others might be completely, I mean, they might be a bit crazy or a bit absurd, but they might not be dangerous or harmful to a specific community. They might not drive violence or anti-democratic discourse.
The book is called Going Mainstream, How Extremists Are Taking Over. It's by Julia Ebner. Julia, if people want to find you online and get some more information, where can they find you?
On Twitter, I guess. Happy for you to get to reach out on Twitter. Please also do share links to the book, or I'd be really interested in hearing also feedback and also constructive criticism at any time.
The book is called Going Mainstream. It will be available as a virtual download from our own virtual bookstore as well. Julia, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for having me.